नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय श्री शुक उवाच कदाचित् औथंकिका कौतुकाप्लवे जन्मार्क्षयोगे समवेतयोषितम् वादित्रगीताद्विजमन्त्रवाचकैः शखारसूनोरभिषेचनं सति Shukadev Goswami said, when Mother Yashoda's baby was slanting his body to attempt to rise and turn around, this attempt was observed by a Vedic ceremony. In such a ceremony called Uttana, which is performed when a child is due to leave the house for the first time, the child is properly bathed. Just after Krishna turned 3 months old, Mother Yashoda celebrated this ceremony with other women of the neighborhood. On that day, there was a conjunction of the moon with the constellation Rohini, as the Brahmins joined by chanting Vedic hymns and professional musicians also took part. This great ceremony was observed by Mother Yashoda. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. There is no question of overpopulation or of children's being a burden for their parents in a Vedic society. Such a society is so well organized and people are so advanced in spiritual consciousness that childbirth is never regarded as a burden or a botheration. The more a child grows, the more his parents become jubilant. And the child's attempts to turn over are also a source of jubilation. Even before the child is born, when the mother is pregnant, many recommended ritualistic ceremonies are performed. For example, when the child has been within the womb for 3 months, and for 7 months, there is a ceremony the mother observes by eating with neighboring children. This ceremony is called Swadabhakshana. Similarly, before the birth of the child, there is the Garbhadhana Samskara. In Vedic civilization, childbirth or pregnancy is never regarded as a burden. Rather, it is a cause for jubilation. In contrast, people in modern civilization do not like pregnancy or childbirth. And when there is a child, they sometimes kill it. We can just consider how human society has fallen since the inauguration of Kali Yuga. Although people still claim to be civilized, at the present moment, there is actually no human civilization, but only an assembly of two-legged animals. We are reading today from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 7, entitled The Killing of the Demon Trinavarta, text number 4. In this purport, Srila Prabhupada is highlighting the nature of the culture of the Vedic civilization, wherein the birth of a child was such a great celebration, and every aspect of the process of the birth of the child, from conception to the various phases of growing in the womb and the various phases of growing up after birth, were celebrated. The celebrations were both to express their actual joy and also to invoke blessings upon the child, to be free from any impediments toward a happy and prosperous life. Interestingly, sometimes devotees, in the name of becoming transcendentalists, lose their humanity. This is actually very common among all religions. In the name of being transcendental to the body, we become insensitive to the human condition. You're not this body. It's all Maya. That when a child is born, it's simply a disgusting product of sex life. But we don't find that here in the Srimad Bhagavatam. We find just the opposite. A devotee is Narottam. A devotee is supposed to be the best human being. The Srimad Bhagavatam tells us, unless we come to the mode of goodness, sattva guna, we cannot transcend the modes of nature. Sometimes we are conditioned by the modes of ignorance and passion, rajaguna and tamaguna. And in the name of a transcendental philosophy, we want to bypass the mode of goodness and just go right from our anger and our lust and our envy right to the transcendental platform. But there's a problem. It's not possible. These four regulative principles that we follow are simply helping us to sustain some principles of the mode of goodness, so that when we actually perform bhakti, chanting God's holy names, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, worshiping the deities, we can actually transcend the modes of nature. So being human is very much an integral part of being transcendental. And we find here this serious concern for this little baby's body and the soul within the body as well. It's not that because I am not this body and you are not this body that we can be cruel to each other. We're not this mind either. What it is, it's a very Maharaji, what a good surprise. Bhakti Vigyan Goswami Maharaj Ki Jai. We can take transcendental philosophy as a justification with an absolute justification to act recklessly, immoral, or even cruel. We are not this body and mind. But we find transcendental people are the most compassionate to the body, mind, and soul. I just came from Mayapur Dham. There was the well-known story of when Srila Prabhupada invited devotees from all over the world for the first festival for Gaur Purnima. At that time, there was only one building that was still a construction site. And it was in expansive fields. There were countless mosquitoes. There was no sanitation. Srila Prabhupada called everyone there. And he would, at night when most people were sleeping, he was going around seeing if everybody was all right, making sure that they had the right food, making sure they had mosquito nets, making sure that they had some proper sleeping arrangements. He wasn't saying, "You aren't this body. Sick, Maya." No, he was very concerned. He was more human than any human could be. And at the same time, his aim was to liberate their souls. Because this body is a medium, and this mind is a medium in which we serve God through reaching the soul. Because we have ears. The ears are material. But when they're used to hear Krishna Katha, the ears facilitate liberation. The eyes are just mundane earth, water, fire, air, ether combination. But this mundane eye, when it's used to see the beautiful form of the Lord and the deities and the devotees of the Lord, the eyes are the facility to liberate us. And what is this tongue? Recently I went to one very famous place in Italy where there's a huge, magnificent cathedral. And it was built in honor of one saint. They had his tongue in that cathedral. They cut out his tongue after he died, and they preserved it in such a way, and it's actually on display. You could see his tongue. He lived about 700 years ago. It's a 700-year-old tongue. And they built a whole cathedral around it. Because that tongue spoke and enlightened so many thousands and thousands of people. And his words that were spoken on his tongue were written down by people, and it's still enlightening millions and millions of people. Now, if you look at the tongue, it's really dried up. kind of doesn't look like a deity in any way, but that's like the deity. But the principle is there. And what is a tongue? It's just a, just this kind of strange piece of flesh. It doesn't really, doesn't have any bones in it. It kind of flips around like a little snake. Jivaipi vasvamita mati deva govinda damodara madhaveti. But the gopis, they are praying to their tongues. The tongue is just a physical object. But the gopis are offering a prayer to their tongue. Please taste the nectar of the names Govinda, Damodar, and Madhava. So through simply utilizing this material facility of a tongue for the proper purpose, it opens the doors to the highest liberation through chanting God's holy names. So a devotee sees the material body and sees the mind in this way. Yes, it is temporary, but at the same time, it is a wonderful facility given to actually connect our consciousness back to the eternal soul and to Krishna. Sometimes devotees have a misconception that grihastha life is meant simply to suffer so bad that you ultimately become detached. It's the way I was taught. That grihastha life is, you know, getting married, having a husband, having a wife, having children, having a house. It's all so much botheration, so much trouble. The only purpose of it is to suffer so terribly that you become detached and join the brahmacharya ashram. And then your spiritual life can begin. That's not what we read in Srimad Bhagavatam. Srila Prabhupada is explaining how in the Vedic civilization, grihastha life was actually full of joy. There were celebrations and ceremonies and festivals for every little detail that we don't even take notice of here. This festival that we're reading about today. And you people who are married and had children, I don't know, maybe you had festivals for this. But did you have a festival when your child first slanted his body to roll over? Please raise your hand. According to this purport, if you didn't, you're something like a two-legged animal. Such refined sensitivity. The child is first starting to be able to slant its whole body and turn over. And when the mother and father see this, oh, Uttana! Call the Brahmins, call the musicians. And they're having yajnas and they're doing abhishekams for the baby and they're chanting mantras and it's joyous. And Mother Yashoda, how is she? She's inviting all the Brijabasis to celebrate. They're serving out feasts, they're having kirtans, they're dancing, they're singing, she's receiving guests. And little baby Krishna, he just leaned. Now, Krishna knows everything, even if he's a baby. But ordinary babies, they don't know what's happening. This little baby just leans, and all of a sudden there's music and dancing and feasts and yajnas and incredible. Everyone is so happy because the baby is getting blessed. So much love, so much affection, so much care. Of course, you know, that same type of civilization, when a devotee's sick, when a devotee's dying, you know, there's that same type of care to try to give inspiration to the person, to try to help the person. So here we find Yashoda Mai and Nanda Maharaj are having this beautiful festival. And little baby Krishna, he starts to yawn because he's very tired. Because he's only 3 months old. And Yashoda Mai, she sees that her child is tired. And she has such refined motherly love. She is Brajeshwari. She's the queen of Vrindavan, Vrajarani, Yashoda Mai. Every single one of the countless people in Vrindavan, they're all willing to do everything and anything to serve the wishes of Nanda and Yashoda. Do you think it would have been difficult for Yashoda to find a babysitter? Because there's so many guests and she's taking care of everything, she could have just, she had a lot to do. She could have just taken the little baby and give it to some other gopi and said, you know, take care, I have to do things. She wanted the highest quality of happiness for Krishna. So she understood Krishna needed to sleep. And Prabhupada describes here that when a baby like this at that age wants to sleep, the mother wants the baby to feel so protected and so sheltered and so loved when it goes to sleep. That Mother Yashoda, they made a little bed underneath, because they were right in the middle of this whole festival scenario. They made a little bed under a cart, big cart, that was holding utensils. And Yashoda Mai laid down with Krishna under the cart, embracing him. And in this way, feeling the love of his mother, he fell asleep. The idea of a child could sleep so nicely if he's feeling the love of his mother. Then after Krishna fell asleep, then Yashoda Mai left him there. There were people around. And then she went, because there were so many people she had to greet and she had to serve and she had so many arrangements that she was doing. Interestingly, who is the person who is with such refined sensitivity appreciating these details of motherly love and motherly care? Who is the person who is explaining how joyful all the Brijavasis were to see this little baby growing? Shukadev Goswami. He's the most transcendental person that ever lived. Who is Shukadev Goswami? Let's go back to his own realizations. You know, we're talking about here when a baby is in the womb of the mother
at a certain stage, then the mother has a big feast and invites the neighborhood children and sits among the neighborhood children and eats with them. And meanwhile, there's yajnas and all these other things going on. Every stage to bless the child. Well, Shukadeva Goswami, he knows, he had quite an experience in the womb of his mother. He's the son of Vyasadeva. And he was Brahman realized from his conception. Can you imagine? Time of conception, God knows what it looks like. You have to kind of see it under a telescope or something, or a microscope. This little emulsification of semen and ovum, and I never studied biology, but I read in the scriptures some of these things, and then a little life form comes. The life transfers, and then the body begins to develop. From that stage, he was a liberated Brahman realized soul. Fully conscious. And then as he grew up in the womb, you know, 1 month, 2 months, 3 months, he was meditating on Brahman. Even before he had hands or legs, he was meditating on Brahman. Even before his brain, he was meditating on Brahman. And when it came to 9 months, when it's time for birth, which is kind of like liberation, because it's pretty boring in a womb. Think about it. You were in that womb. Everyone in this room laughing. You were there. If you're not careful, you'll do it again. It's pitch dark. There's no light in there. Yes? Total darkness. And not only is there total darkness, but you know, your movements are so. Sometimes if you have a hurt back and you have to lay in a bed for 3 weeks, you think how miserable it is. Well, you're months in the womb and you're just kind of curled up. If your mother eats something that's too spicy, or if she gets acidity, then it burns you. You're helpless. You can't talk, you can't walk, you can't sit, you can't lay. You're just curled up. So birth is something that's very nice. You actually see the light. You can move around. You could start to eat stuff with your mouth. Now you're just eating through your navel. And I don't think the navel has any capacity to taste anything. So you don't even get to taste anything. Very difficult situation. So Shukadeva Goswami, he understands that this world is so maya. It's so full of illusion. It's so full of entanglements. It's so full of dualities. That I will be distracted. All the pleasures and exciting things that we are all so attracted to in this world, Shukadeva Goswami saw as distraction from his meditation on Brahman. On the spiritual light within himself. So he decided, I'm not going to leave the womb. I will live and I will die in the womb of my mother and never forget Brahman, the supreme truth. So he did. He had that power. No matter how much those natural winds that try to push the child down and out. He just sat there, curled up. And he was growing and growing. He remained in the womb of his mother for 12 years. Consider that, all of you mothers. 12 years. And he was the size of a 12-year-old child. And the father was his only son. He wanted to see him, but he wouldn't come out. He refused to come out. This is how transcendental Shukadev Goswami said, because everything in the world is Maya. Distractions. And finally, Vyasadeva and even Krishna, they spoke the glories of Krishna. And Shukadev Goswami understood that this sweetness, this taste of hearing about Krishna is better than mukti. He was already in the state of mukti. This is better. Prema, bhakti, is a higher platform of transcendental bliss than liberation and mukti. So he actually came out to render loving service of hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord. He was beyond liberation. Mukti said, when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was speaking with Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, who was a very highly liberated person, who worshipped the impersonal, all-pervading, unmanifested Brahman his whole life, and was teaching even the greatest scholars the science of jnana. Mukti was the ultimate object of everything he did. But after he tasted the sweetness of bhakti, love of God, he went to Lord Chaitanya and told him that I tatenu kampam susamikshamano, this famous verse, which tells that one who, even under very painful, difficult situations, remembers the Lord with a grateful heart and offers obeisances, that person alone, mukti is his rightful claim. So Sarvabhauma crossed out the name mukti and wrote bhakti, and wanted to show Lord Chaitanya, this is how you have affected me. And Lord Chaitanya said, I am very happy with your sentiment, but you cannot change the words of the Srimad Bhagavatam. He said, I hate this word mukti after I've tasted the sweetness of bhakti. And Lord Chaitanya said, don't you understand? The perfection of mukti is prema. Mukti is to love God unconditionally. That's the highest developed realization of mukti. Mukti is perfect. Keep it as it is. So he did. This was Shukadev Goswami. He had attained the impersonal, liberated state of mukti beyond nashochati, nakankshati. He had no desires, he had no lamentations. But after tasting the sweetness of Hari Katha, Hari Kirtan, Hari Smarana, that bhava was so sweet. It was the most highly developed state of mukti. And he came out of his house, he was naked, 12 years old. Can you imagine? He didn't have to learn how to walk, he didn't have to learn how to talk, he was already. As soon as he was born, he just walked out. Mother and father, they waited 12 years for this. He just left home. So the father was chasing after him. Shukadev, come home, come home. He just kept walking. I didn't even have clothes on. That was just like a, that was a distraction, thinking about clothes. Today people are very attached to fashions. Shukadev Goswami, he just walked out. This fashion that Prabhupada gave us. Whether I'm sitting with the brahmacharis taking prasad, or whether I'm in a holy place, or whether I'm yesterday at a marriage with all distinguished aristocratic people, same. Doesn't matter, same fashion. It's so nice. So Shukadev was going, and he didn't even see the difference between male or female or anything. He was completely absorbed in seeing the essence. And yet it is Shukadev Goswami, the topmost brahmachari, topmost sannyasi, Shukadev Goswami, the topmost renunciate, transcendentalist, one of the 12 Mahajans. It is he that is describing with so much ecstasy the different celebrations for the growth of little baby Krishna. And Srila Prabhupada, who is such a foremost representative of Shukadev Goswami, he's going into such beautiful details in the purport of what human civilization could be. Such joy. Of course, we are speaking about Krishna and how he is growing up, so that is supremely transcendental subject matter. But Srila Prabhupada is explaining that any child that is growing up and going through these stages of starting to lean, uttana, it is celebrated. It's taken so seriously. People are in joy because they understand that this is a child of God. This is a mamayvam so jiva loke jiva bhuta sanata. This is a part and parcel of Krishna. So Shukadev Goswami is describing this with so much affection. And not only that, he's considering it so important. Parikshit Maharaj only has about a day or two to live. And he's explaining these beautiful pastimes. So Yashoda Mai puts Krishna to sleep in such a way that he's feeling motherly love so dearly. And then she goes to serve all others. But Krishna wants to get her attention. And we're about to read in the coming verses what he does. But since most of you don't come to class during the week, because next weekend this section of the Bhagavatam will be complete. So would you like me to share with you what is about to happen? So Krishna cries. He cries for the milk of his mother. He's thirsty. And what is the milk of his mother? The milk of his mother is her love. When you showed him, the milk that comes from her body is her vatsalya ras, her vatsalya bhava, her motherly affection is manifesting in the form of milk. This is also very, very
important understanding that physical manifestations of internal love are very sacred. When we offer the arti, we offer incense, chamara, the lamp with ghee. Krishna doesn't need ghee on a piece of cotton that's lit with a match. He has unlimited goddesses of fortune constantly worshiping him. He's from Goloka, where every cow is a Kamadhenu cow. Can you imagine how much ghee is there? So he needs our little ghee lamp, little wick. But these, they are expressions, they are manifestations of the internal feeling of our heart, our desire to serve him, our desire to love him. And those manifestations are sacred because they're expressions of bhakti, of love. Transformation of material elements into spiritual elements through the intention of love. Building this temple. Whatever is there, it's the beauty is not in the wood or in the marble or in the cloth. The beauty is in the intention of devotion, the will to serve in which it is offered. So for Yashoda Mai, she had such motherly love. That motherly love was spontaneously, ecstatically expressed through milk that she offered to little baby Krishna. Because at that time, that's all he ate. Of course, we know Krishna. That was all he was supposed to eat. And Krishna was crying for his mother's milk. He was hungry for her love. He was hungry for her devotion. And this is Krishna. He is Atmarama. He is completely self-satisfied. He's the proprietor of everything that exists. He's absolutely fully satisfied in himself. He's Satchit Ananda, eternal, full of knowledge, full of bliss. Krishna does not need anything. But because he's Bhakta Vatsal, he's Bhava Grahi. Krishna, he yearns to taste the sweetness of his devotee's love. So here, Krishna is yearning for Yashoda Mai's motherly love. And not only that, he's crying. How beautiful. That absolute truth who's the source of almighty Allah, who's the source of almighty Narasingha Dev, who's the source of almighty Mahavishnu, who's the source of Jehovah and the Lord of all creation, who by a mere glance can destroy entire civilizations of wicked people. He's crying. Hari Hari. Really crying. Tears. Ah! Of course, when Krishna cries, it's very sweet. When babies cry, I don't know what you mothers think, but the rest of us, it's not very sweet. Srila Prabhupada said that certain things that interrupted his translations was door slamming and babies crying. It's actually quite annoying, isn't it?
young baby. You know, when we're giving class and a cell phone comes off, you know, okay, turn off your cell phone. But then, it's very upsetting. Baby's crying. I'm sorry. But when Krishna cries, it's very sweet. It's melodious. It's when Krishna cries, it has the same effect as the sound of his flute. Doesn't sound like the flute, but it has the same effect of awakening so much love in our hearts. So Krishna's crying for the love of his mother. Not just wishing the love of his mother, crying for the love of his mother. This is the beauty of bhakti. Krishna cries for the love of his devotee. And the devotee cries for the love of Krishna. Srila Prabhupada said, the qualification for love of God is by offering tears. Tears of genuine yearning to love and serve Krishna. Tears that are imitation wash away the conclusions of the Vedas. But the tears of the heart that genuinely yearn to love and serve the Lord nourish, like nothing else, they nourish the seed of devotion within our heart, the flower of prema. Vipralamba Seva, we read about how devotees cry for Krishna. And here we find Krishna crying for his devotee. But Yashodamai couldn't hear the crying. Why? Because there was so much music and so many mantras being chanted by Brahmins. So with his very delicate, tiny, little 3-month-old baby foot, he kicked it and kicked the massive cart that he was under. Somehow or other, he just touched it. The cart kind of rose into the air. It was a massive cart. It had all kinds of utensils of gold and silver and copper and brass and all of these pots and utensils. And the cart, according to Jiva Goswami, it went up in the air. And the wheel of the cart was completely pushed right out of its axle and went flying. And the spokes were shattered. And the cart went tumbling down to the ground with such a loud, loud crashing sound. There was an asura, a demon, named Shakata, who was a ghost. And ghosts are always trying to find some body to utilize because they have no gross body. They have subtle bodies full of desires and oftentimes very frustrated desires. And sometimes in their frustration, misery breeds company. People who are really miserable sometimes want to see other people miserable. So this Shakata was really miserable. He was evil. He wanted to kill, to destroy. He was an associate of Kamsa, who especially came there to kill Krishna. So this ghostly body entered into that cart for the purpose of killing Krishna. Krishna understood who he was, little 3-month-old boy, but he knew everything. He kicked him.
and he liberated Shakatashura. Killed his body and liberated his soul. How is it done? So sweetly. Understand, this was the massive, very hard, powerful body of an asura. And how did Krishna, with his, he was only a tiny little child, how did he even reach, the cart with his foot? Somehow or other, he just kicked and he happened to hit Vamanadeva, when he wanted to pierce the universe, what did he do with his foot? He grew to such a size, massive size, that with one step he could cover half the universe. And Narasingadeva, when he wanted to pierce Hiranyakashipu, very hard, powerful nails. But Gopal, he stayed his same little tiny body. He didn't grow like Vamanadeva. And his feet, that little foot, was softer than a leaf. The acharyas explain that a baby tamal leaf, have you ever touched one? Not a full-grown tamal leaf. We have some tamal trees downstairs. If you go to these tamal trees, if there's a brand new leaf just growing, just sprouting out of a twig, if you touch it, it's so smooth and so soft. Krishna's limbs were softer and smoother than a tamal leaf. What to speak of, he's a baby. But yet it shattered this massive demoniac cart. Just to show that even if Krishna wants to perform the most powerful deeds, he doesn't allow it to interrupt the sweetness of his relations with his devotees. He does it as a little baby crying for the milk of his mother. The tumult of that sound attracted all the Brijavasis to come. And when they saw Krishna unharmed, right in the middle of a collapsed cart and all these very, very heavy pots and other sorts of objects, they couldn't believe he wasn't hurt. He was still, he just wanted his mother's milk. They were wondering what happened, and they were speculating in so many ways, how possibly could this have happened? And the little children who were watching Krishna, they said, we saw Krishna cried and he kicked the cart and the whole cart fell. And the older gopis and gopas said, impossible. How could little baby Krishna's soft little foot break this massive cart? So they began to perform other types of yajnas. First they were performing yajnas to celebrate his rolling over, and now they're changing it over to do yajnas to protect the child from evil influences that may be upon him, to protect him. So in every sense, they're constantly offering blessings, invoking blessings. And Thakur Bhaktivinod says that this Shakatashura represents the ghost of the previous tendencies that we have. Very dangerous. Just like a ghost haunts one. Similarly, before we come to the path of bhakti, we have certain previous attachments and tendencies. to enjoy certain things, to be averse to certain things, to be addicted to certain things. And what happens is after we become Krishna conscious, after we start practicing bhakti, when we first start, the inertia and the initial enthusiasm, we kind of forget these things. But oftentimes what happens is after a while, these ghosts come back to get us. Hari Hari. These tendencies start trying to haunt us. The conditionings of our past. And they are great obstacles unless we understand how to deal with them. Now, when these Shakatasuras come after us, the only way to rise above them is to cry out, just like Krishna cried out for Yashoda to kill Shakatasura. So similarly, we must cry out for Krishna to come with his soft, beautiful, lotus-like feet in his name, in his pastimes, in his beautiful deity form, in the form of serving his loving devotees, in the form of showing compassion to the conditioned souls, in the form of prayer. The nine processes of devotional service are there, especially the chanting of the holy names. If we take shelter, then Krishna will appear to rescue us from our previous bad habits. In this way, as Krishna cried for his devotee, when Shakatasura is all around us, we cry out for Krishna. We could be very liberated two-legged animals. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was making four-legged animals, pure devotees of the Lord, in the Jarikanda forest. But this is a very important verse and a very important purport. It teaches us what we must be on guard of. We must be on guard of insensitivity to our own past habits and sensitivity toward our own anarthas. We must deal with them. We must take shelter of Krishna. And also the understanding of the beauty of bhakti culture. How it makes us, it should make us the most refined, sensitive, cultured human beings while being transcendental. Honor, respect, love for people, joy on the various stages of life that are there within civilization, but at the same time never losing focus on the eternal soul and on the super soul, Krishna. Thank you very much. Is there any questions? We have time for one or two questions. Yes, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna, Maharaj.
Hari Hari.
Maharaj, when the non-devotees, they have to witness the non-human or insensitive behavior of the devotees. It, as a devotees, maybe over a period of time, you get used to it. But when the non-devotees, they have to witness it, and when they express their sorrow.
Witness what?
Non-devotees, when they witness the insensitive behavior or non-human behavior of the devotees, then it really, you know, becomes difficult to tackle that situation. So, you just go speechless. You just don't understand what to, you know, say to them or how to, you know, handle that situation. So, Maharaj, it's how to tackle it when, you know, you are put in such a situation when the non-devotees witness such a behavior of the devotees and when it becomes very difficult for them to take it.
Haribo.
Best thing to do is be an example in your own life. By our own example, we can inspire so many people. So we should be honest. We should be honest when we're speaking to them that, you know, this person may be a great soul and everything else, but still, you know, this is not really, you know, sorry for his carelessness. We should be honest. And at the same time, we should exemplify these divine virtues ourselves in our own life. And among people that we have influence over, we should inspire these virtues. Does that answer your question? Hare Krishna. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Hare Krishna. All the devotees are requested to kindly go to the Bharatiya Vidya Bhavan, where the convocation ceremony for the Gita Champions League competition is being held today.